Monthly meeting of the Parks, Arts, and Culture Committee of Denver City Council. Join us in the Parks, Arts, and Culture Committee starting now.
Parks, Art, and Culture Committee, the best committee. And I will start with introductions with Council President to my left.
Thank you. Good morning, Amanda Sandoval, Northwest Denver, District 1.
Good morning, Darrell Watson, City Council, District 9.
Good morning, Diana Romero Campbell, Southeast Denver, District 4.
Great, and I will just love to introduce our guest from CBCA. If you can introduce yourself and your organization and go ahead and take it away.
Absolutely. Where do I look?
Look at us.
Okay. Sorry. Hi, everyone. I'm Meredith Badler. I'm the Deputy Director at the Colorado Business Committee for the Arts, the CBCA, and I'm delighted to be with you today. I have a bunch of data to share, but also some important stories, some calls to action, some ideas for you all to take back to your individual districts and collectively as Denver City Council and members of this committee, some things I think you'll be interested in. So with that, I'll dive in. So just a little bit about CBCA. I'm actually with some familiar faces in the room, but for those that don't know, CBCA is a nonprofit organization. We're a 501c3, so we are not part of city government or state government. We're not a funder, which gives us a lot of flexibility to do the work we do, which is to advance Colorado's creative economy by connecting arts and business. We do that on a statewide level, though we are based here in Denver, but we do get to travel around a bit. And we've been doing that work for 40 years. That's what this beautiful, beautiful graphic indicates there. And we're a membership organization. We do advocacy, research, which I'll share a little bit more about, various programs, training, arts engagement, and volunteer opportunities. A little bit more, these are just some of our programs. We're a small and mighty team of three that do a lot, again, on a metro and statewide level. Again, connecting businesses and their employees to arts and culture, either through free tickets or leadership training. We help artists with the business side of their practice, so connecting them to pro bono legal assistance or business skills trainings. And then we do advocacy work, really to elevate arts, culture, and the creative industries and its value. So whether that's our economic research, which I'm here to talk about, actually lobbying a little bit at the state legislature, our annual Business for the Arts Awards, and a variety of other things that we are honored to get asked to help with. So this is really what I'm here to share. CBCA has been quantifying the value of arts, culture, and scientific nonprofit organizations for over 30 years. We have been doing this economic activity study every other year since 1993. It has always been done in partnership with the SCFD, the Scientific and Cultural Facilities District. That's our special taxing district that covers the seven counties of the metro area that funds about 300 nonprofit organizations, from the zoo and the Denver Art Museum and the Botanic Gardens to our mid-size organizations, the Symphony, the Colorado Ballet, to small community-based all-volunteer organizations in arts, culture, and the creative industries, arts, culture, and science. So we've been partnering with the SCFD to collect this data and talk about the impact of those organizations. What else do I want to say about this study? Here we go. So again, it's biennial. This is who we're talking about. Because we do this study every other year, I'm going to show you data from 2024. And then we're able to make comparisons back to the prior study, which had data from 2022, as well as 2019, as well as some of our longitudinal trends. So this report was really helping us look at sort of the impact of the pandemic and kind of that long tail and where we are now. So you'll see us make comparisons to sort of pre-pandemic levels in 2019, that bounce back. And then I think 2025, anecdotally, we're seeing some of these trends continue and some interesting and frankly concerning ways. I think it's important just to also clarify what is not included in this study. So this is just looking at those SCFD organizations. So it doesn't include Red Rocks. It doesn't include Taylor Swift at whichever arena she performed at. It doesn't include the Fillmore Auditorium. It doesn't include local gallery sales. So just know, I'm gonna show you some what I think are pretty impressive numbers when we talk about economic impact and jobs and attendance in arts and culture. And just know that if we were to include the entire for-profit creative industries and beyond, those numbers would actually be exponentially larger. Any questions before I dive into the numbers?
You can just get through the presentation and we'll let people ask questions after.
Love it.
Thank you.
All right, let's see some big numbers. So this is really the big one. We quantify the total economic activity generated by those SCFD-funded arts, culture, and scientific organizations, which totaled a whopping $3.12 billion in economic activity. If you don't remember any other number from today, remember this one. It is almost pi, if that helps you remember, 3.12, and that is billion with a B. That is not a typo. And that we saw a huge increase over 2022 and a 36% increase over 2019. What is included in this number is direct and indirect spending from audiences, you and I, operations, what those organizations have to spend to keep the lights open and performances running and so on, as well as capital projects. So when you think about it, when you go, I live in District 7, so I'll shout out Swallow Hill. If you go to a performance at Swallow Hill, you're paying for your ticket. Maybe you're taking a kid to a class. Maybe you're buying a subscription to go to several concerts. Maybe you're seeing them out and about. But before and after that, maybe you're paying for a babysitter. Maybe you're going out to dinner. Maybe you're putting gas in your car. Maybe you're taking out-of-town guests with you. Suddenly, you are spending a lot more than that reasonable ticket cost. And same for those organizations. They have to pay for maintenance on their facilities. They have to pay their staff. They have to buy equipment, art supplies, et cetera, instruments. And because of that, that then fuels further into our economy. Because that music teacher at Swallow Hill is getting paid and getting that job, she can go pay her mortgage and take her family to the Denver Art Museum and get dinner after the show, et cetera. So all of that is what gets us to this $3.12 billion. And you can see sort of how it breaks out there. Really, audience spending is the key here, and you're going to hear me talk about that a lot because I think that's one of our really calls to action for our community and ourselves to get back out there. Now, those are very valuable dollars. I would argue maybe the most valuable dollars are the ones that aren't already here in the 7-county district. So that total economic impact of cultural tourists was $692 million. That was also a record-breaking figure, also a significant increase over the past several years. We saw a huge increase in international visitors in 2024, which is fabulous. You better believe they're spending money at the airport, getting transportation around town, lodging, restaurants. So even if they're not coming here just for Pissarro at the Denver Art Museum, maybe they're here visiting family. Maybe they're taking in an extra day before they go up to the mountains. We're giving them something to do, another way to spend their time and their money when they are here in the area, and showing off our cultural assets. I think there's still a perception that we don't have the arts and culture we do here in Denver and Colorado that rival the coasts, and we absolutely do, and we want to show that off. And there's a significant economic impact to that. I'm going to talk a little bit about attendance and education, how we're reaching people of all ages and getting them engaged in arts and culture. So attendance was 14.5 million engagements in 2024. That's a 12% increase over 2022, so still seeing that bounce back from the pandemic, which is wonderful. However, we are still behind where we were in 2019. 2019 was a banner blockbuster year, but we also know attendance behavior has changed. Mm-hmm. I work in the arts, and I can tell you, I don't attend as many things as I used to. When we had our event to roll out this study just a month ago, one of our panelists made the comment that arts and culture used to be in competition with other leisure activities, you know, people hiking, spending times in our parks, doing, you know, going to sporting events. We are now in an era where we're in competition with the couch of people just leaving their home and that extra effort, the extra time, the extra cost, putting on real pants. It's a true thing. So we're not, you know, this is something we're going to continue to pay attention to. Again, thinking back to that audience spending, there's an economic effect when we're not out attending things as much as we used to as well. So this is something we're paying close attention to. However, I have to say this because it's what it's the second. If this is the second thing you remember, this is what it will be. Our research analyst also calculated the total attendance at our major sporting events in 2024. So when you combine total in-person attendance at the Broncos, Avalanche, Nuggets, Rapids, and Rockies, it equaled only 4.9 million in 2024. This is three times as much attendance.
Take that, sports.
That's right. And we love them. It is not a competition. There's a competition. Time and place for both. But if you think about it, how many times a year are the Broncos in town? Yeah. And how much can you literally walk within a mile of where we are right now? And how many different performances or museums can you attend just in a 1 mile radius from the city building? And how much more accessible are those opportunities as well? And I could go on and on about the other benefits of participating in arts and culture. We are doing really great, though, in how we're reaching our youth and school children. We were delighted to see these numbers continue to increase. This was something we were definitely watching post-pandemic, of how we were bringing arts and culture back into schools, into classrooms, field trips. So delighted to see 4.5 million educational experiences. Again, consistent increases over 2019 and 2022. Talk a little bit about jobs. I think it's important for people to realize that arts, culture, and these scientific organizations are major employers. This is a workforce sector, and it's not just musicians and artists. These are accountants, marketers, executives, people at all levels. And we continue to see record-breaking numbers in total jobs in arts and culture. So 14,466, an 8% increase over 2019. So again, further than we were before the pandemic. And this does include full-time, part-time, and contract workers. So we know a lot of people, particularly artists, performers, are working several jobs at once. So that's counted here. However, again, the flip side to this, so that 8% increase in total jobs from 2019, there was a 46% increase in total personnel costs from 2019. So it's wonderful. We should be paying our cultural workers, our artists, our nonprofit professionals more. They deserve it. They work hard. But this becomes an operational challenge for many of these organizations when jobs are in, or personnel costs are increasing at this rate. There's a lot of things that factor into this. This is fairly nuanced, but in general, we just know it costs more to hire people and run these organizations these days. And then also, again, thinking back to our attendance numbers lagging, that was something we saw post-pandemic, and we're continuing to see that sort of misalignment at the moment. And the last section I'm going to get into here is giving to arts and culture. So how, aside from earned income, what are the contributed income sources for these cultural organizations, aggregate and then by their source? So aggregate, $286 million contributed to cultural organizations in 2024. And there was a slight dip there compared to 2022. And really, the primary reason for that is federal support related to the pandemic that went away. So in 2022, we saw a massive influx of federal support to help organizations make it through some pretty dark times. Those were one-time grants, those were ARPA funds, those were shuttered venue operator grants, you know, it was incredible to see that level of support, but we knew that was one-time giving. And unsurprisingly, that went away. We saw a 90% decrease in support from the federal government between 2022 and 2024. So that's largely where that dip comes from. We did see a nice increase from donation, from individual donations from people, you and I, and foundations. Those increased 10% and 36% respectively. However, corporate giving only increased about 4% from 2022 to 2024. So you can see here sort of those breakdown by total. So these are the 2024 numbers, how much money came in from all of those different categories. And then here you can see them as relative percentages of the whole. I will say corporate giving has always been one of the smallest slices of the pie. I, as this Colorado Business Committee for the Arts, we pay very close attention to this. This is something we absolutely believe is an important call to action to our business community. And I think it's also important to see the role that state and local government is doing to help fill some of that gap. And that's a number we've seen increase over the years, which is great. And then I'll mention that, I'm going to go back, $85 million from the SCFD, the Scientific and Cultural Facilities District. That is the single largest funding source for arts and culture in the region. It is the second largest dedicated taxing district for arts and culture in the country. $85 million, that's 30% of the pie. That is incredible. That is truly sustaining culture for all. And we'll be, you'll be hearing a lot more about it. I think Andrea will be coming to this committee
in February.
In February, yes. Great. Uh-huh. I mean, she'll be talking about that road to reauthorization. As voters, as citizens in the seven county area, we get a chance to take a look at that statute and reaffirm it in 2 years, in 2028. That's 2 years, 3 years? Soon. So yeah, I just think it's important. Again, there's some big numbers here. There's some exciting stories here. But I do also believe there's a call to action here. There are some concerning trends around some of that philanthropy and giving numbers, some of that attendance numbers. It really takes all of us to do what we can in our capacity as elected officials, as our capacity as community members, as neighbors, as donors, as people who love and support the arts. You wouldn't be on this committee if you didn't. To do what we can to keep us moving in the right direction. That was just a snapshot. I did bring copies of our one-pager in both English and in Spanish. There's a 20-page white paper research report. If you want, there's tons of graphs and longitudinal data. I encourage you to dig into that if you'd like. Our wonderful sponsors. And then I wanted to end with just this one piece. Last year, CBCA rolled out this policy framework for the state of Colorado. So not just Denver, and it's not just ours. We did about a year and a half of community engagement to ask people what they wanted in terms of policy priorities for our arts, culture, and creative industries. And I just wanted to share with you the high level framework. I think, again, as you are hearing this data and thinking, what can I do? What can we do? These are some of the things that we heard from people around the state that they were most interested in from a policy perspective. So making sure our communities had accessible and thriving arts and culture that community members felt that they could easily participate in and that enriched their neighborhoods. Supporting our creative economy, so really looking at this information and making sure our creative economy has a seat at the table and is getting valued and supported in that way. That we're supporting creative workers, the actual individuals who are making these creative products that are providing that for us, that they can stay in Denver and stay in Colorado and thrive here. And then the last one here is related to arts education. So again, I highlighted what our SCFD organizations are doing with school children, but there's a lot more that can be done to make sure arts education is, again, equitable and accessible across the state. So I'll go back here for now. But yeah, would love to answer questions or see what else I can share.
Great. Thank you so much, Meredith. This was amazing. And also, I wish everyone that presented had an improv background because it's so engaging.
And the benefits of theater.
Yes, the benefits of the arts right in front of our eyes. I also want to welcome Councilwoman Parody and Councilwoman Lewis to the meeting. Thank you for joining us. And Councilman Hines. I forgot you weren't here in the beginning either. And we'll start with questions with Councilman Hines.
Okay. Thank you. I wouldn't be here if not for the arts. I was a state level debater in high school in Texas, went to state junior, senior high school. Our debate coach required us to compete in individual events as well, which I did not want to do, but I did it anyway because I wanted to debate. I have a computer science degree, an MBA in finance. I don't use either of those, really. I will do a little bit of financial analysis, some of the numbers that you presented. But the one taught skill I use the most here is that debate training. As an elected official in Denver. So my interest in arts and interpret our proclamations a little differently than a lot of people as opposed to reading them. Like, whereas, just trying to highlight the, that it is a proclamation a little bit more. And a lot of that's from those individual events that my debate coach made me participate in. So,
love that.
Yeah. Played saxophone for a decade. I was a radio DJ in college. My grandfather was an art dealer, special smuggler. Actually, scratch that. We're on the record. he's no longer with us on this planet, so there's no way to hold him accountable. But he had an art, pretty magnificent art collection.
Thank you for sharing that.
You talked about attendance is down, I think 5.1% over 2019, and yet revenue is quite a bit up. So that suggests to me that dollar per person is going up. Am I gathering that right? Or is there another something?
So our economic activity numbers, that sort of audience spending, there's an added multiplier that gets put on that. So what I showed you was not just the pure dollars, not just like these are subscription sales or ticket sales or so on. We use multipliers from the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis. We are the researchers that we hire, not me. use that to calculate that indirect impact. So that, so it's not quite, yeah, that indirect, those indirect multipliers are added onto that. But, you know, I think many of these organizations are offering free opportunities. They're offering reduced priced opportunities. But again, they got to keep the lights on as well. So yeah, they have to also be, you know, looking at pricing and finding ways. Maybe they're offering one fewer performance a year, but they're charging more for it. So there's definitely a calculation there. Does that answer your question? Sort of.
Maybe. But you reminded me of, I mean, there's a bit of art in financial analysis too. So my, you know, my MBA was more in the corporate finance side, so financial planning and analysis, and trying to convert, you know, to answer questions, you convert it to a common language, which is dollars, you know, money. And so, like, should we buy this company? Should we diverge this part of the business, or divest this part of the business? You want to come up with some sort of financial analysis, and a lot of that's including assumptions. So to your point, you know, you're adding some assumptions of the number of attendees, then you add an assumption that is based in
based on those multipliers. Yeah. And we, you know, we trust the BEA.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, you've got to do something. I mean, you can't just say, it's just impossible for us to, you know, calculate. People want to know what the economic impact is and what the economic difference is from year to year. So, you know, the difference in economic impact. But that is a bit of art as well.
Sure.
So, in addition to the dollar per attendee that just kind of stuck out in my head, there was also the numbers were up so much. When I thought about dollar per attendee, I was like, you know, it's harder to live on a dollar. I mean, you can't buy $2 with a dollar these days. I mean, you can't buy a dollar with $2. Sorry. The joke is lost when you can't deliver it correctly. But the idea is there's been a lot of inflation since 2019, and I wonder if you or the experts have done the analysis of that inflation adjusted change.
It's a good question. I believe our numbers take that into consideration. Okay. I'd have to double check and get back to you, which I'm happy to do. I think you see that in our personnel costs, though. Sure. I mean, that's, I think, where you're seeing that cost of living increase. You know, as these organizations are hiring more full-time staff, which is amazing. One of the things I didn't mention, the percentage of SCFD organizations that are all volunteer is decreasing, which means more of these organizations are able to hire a part-time executive director, their first full-time executive director. They're able to grow and hire more staff, which is incredible. That's what we want. We want these organizations to be able to be professional and have the capacity to thrive. But that means they're paying people, and they're paying people more than they did in 2019 because of that cost of living. So that's really what, yeah, absolutely. So that's really what, part of what I'm sharing is sort of that call to action of like, if our support of them is increasing at the rate that it takes them to deliver a performance or an exhibit, that's going to be a challenge.
Well, we have so many artists that are just so fabulous at what they do, and are just struggling to pay rent every month too. We got a lot of, you know, the idea of a starving artist. I mean, it's like, if I created art in the same way that everyone else saw the world, then wouldn't really be as you know, alluring as if I was an artist that saw the world in a slightly different way than everyone else. And but if you see the world in a different perspective, it's harder to do a job in a normal way because, you know, your gift is also a curse. You see things different, and it's harder to translate your gift into
Yeah, finding the audience for it.
Yeah.
And that's why I shared that policy framework, because I think, again, this study is very much looking at just those nonprofit organizations funded by the SCFD. But there are a lot of other factors at play of, if musicians can't afford to live in Denver, how are we going to continue to support some of these organizations? I mean, there's related factors.
Well, and with that, I don't expect you to have the numbers, because your analysis is, you're doing what you're doing. But I wonder what the cost of living change is from 2019 to 2024 in Denver. I wonder if that's close to 43%.
That is really interesting. I'm going to make a note of that for our next study and see if that's something we can work in. Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you.
I'm sure you need to like write that down, because I will forget it.
Thank you so much, Councilman. And next we have Councilman Watson.
Thank you, Committee Chair, and thank you, Meredith, and I'll concur with the Committee Chair. Your improv skills are amazing. I love the energy, even the juice in the slides. How your slides aren't these boring blue or gray slides. I mean, I just think you brought it. You brought the juice. CBCA was one of the organizations I had the most fun and enriching experience as a board member. And I loved co-creating with you and the board for CBCA for a few years. One of the things that we looked at when I was on that board was a strategic view on justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. Expansive outside of the SCFDs, but statewide. I was curious if you wanted to share a little bit of some of those without having to give any numbers, because that's your report is specific to SCFD, but really, how is that work looking statewide as far as ensuring that we're elevating art for folks in diverse communities and supporting them? If you don't mind sharing maybe some anecdotes on that good work that CBCA does.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, I think the development of that policy framework really speaks to that. We went literally out of our way to go to some far-reaching corners of the state to hear from communities. I think our focus group for that in the Roaring Fork Valley was almost all Latina women, which was amazing and a very fascinating conversation and a huge part of particularly that community. We went to La Junta and spoke to folks on the Eastern Plains, which is a very different environment. So I think it's really showing up for CBCA in some of our community engagement and proactively reaching out and physically going to those places to hear directly about their priorities. Our advocacy work is really where a lot of our emphasis on equity and inclusion is showing up. Our top level values for that policy framework relate to policy priorities that are culturally responsive and relevant to people in the state, and that also making sure that arts and culture is truly for all. And that speaks to accessibility, as well as representation, as well as content. And I think in this area, when we talk about freedom of creative expression, that is also part of the dialogue.
I love that, Meredith, and I think just the name, the Colorado Business Committee for the Arts, the fact that you don't cease any ground to the very clear-eyed business focus of what arts do to enrich the lives of folks across not just Denver, but the state. I love this report. I love the ability, when I was working at that large company I was at when I was on your board, that we were able to communicate the benefits, not just to folks wanting to move to Denver, but also the benefit of arts and culture as it pertains to really a healthy city.
Yeah.
And how you, CBCA always reflects that without losing the art focus, but also making sure the bottom line of our businesses are directly impacted. So thank you so much, Meredith, for your good work and your excitement and enthusiasm that you bring to this, everything that CBCA does. So thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Councilwoman Romero Campbell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the presentation. It's interesting to see. We oftentimes just get Denver specific information, and to look at the regional impact of the arts is great. I was actually looking at the report because I wanted to disaggregate the Denver's and know specifically for Denver what that impact was. So I'm looking through the report. Is that part of the report, or you don't?
Don't
you just keep it as a whole?
It. Yeah, okay. And very intentionally so, actually. I mean, we get that question a lot. You better believe Boulder County wants to see their numbers. Jefferson County wants to see their numbers. Tier 2s want to see their numbers. Visual Arts wants to see their numbers. You know, I think one of the many values of the SCFD is how it promotes regional collaboration. I mean, it's actually like baked into how some of these organizations get funded, is demonstrating that they're reaching people and serving people across counties, within their neighborhoods, within their counties, and across, and that they're collaborating with organizations across county and across discipline. And we all are cultural omnivores ourselves and cross those boundaries. So we very intentionally don't disaggregate it because we think that regional approach is so important. So I apologize. You will not see that in the report.
It was worth it for the cultural omnivore. So I was like, that's awesome. Do you also collect information about who is accessing?
Oh, I wish. Yes and no. So we have the benefit of this report. Our data collection method comes directly from those SCFD grant reports. So every organization that gets funding from the SCFD has to fill out a final grant report, no matter what tier. All of that data then comes to us. So for my data friends in the room, that is a 100% response rate on our survey, because they have to fill it out. But it also means we're beholden to what the SCFD asks. And so while they do ask some questions about demographics, they don't get super granular. Not every organization answers it. Not every organization answers it the same way. It is something we have spoken to them about for years, because we want to be able to say who was included in that 14.5 million. And we have some anecdotal information and some qualitative information, but we can't give you sort of hard and fast numbers, at least not across all of those organizations.
Okay.
I wish we could. Again, it's something we're continuing to talk to them about. Ask Andrea about it when she's here in February. Particularly for the smaller organizations. Some of them just don't have the capacity to be collecting that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And you don't want to overtax the burden for the organizations to have to do that reporting, but sometimes just that supplemental, and if you have the time, supplemental piece to that report.
I think, I haven't looked at it closely. I think some of the different tiers are asked different things. But for us to be able to aggregate it in total, we haven't been able to. Other than, and there is some stuff in that report, I believe, about some of the qualitative analysis that we've gotten, but not necessarily like percentages.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The last question I had was, so it's next year that you will be doing this report, or
this
when do they collect
out
it'll come
last
at the end
month.
Of next this came out last month so the next one would happen
out.
In 2026
2027 with data from 26
2027 for data 26 okay
and that will be the last report before the reauthorization, so that'll be an important one.
All right,
be ready.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Madam, so much. That's all I had so far, but I just wanted to say thank you so much. This is amazing. I really feel that the arts are medicine and healing for community. It supports mental health, which is a big concern that I've heard from our youth, and I would love to be able to take theater into schools. A lot of the schools don't provide arts education anymore, and that is what got me through. And as a young child on the spectrum, I learned a lot from those trips to the Museum of Nature and Science or the Art Museum that I couldn't learn in a classroom the way someone else might be able to learn. And so I think this is really important to look at the dollar amount, because we talk about economics a lot. And I remember when I was a little girl and I told my parents I wanted to be an actress when I grew up, and they said, that will not make you any money. The chances of you being able to make a living are very rare. And I'm doing improv just like you. I really think about
children not being able to live out their dreams or being told that they can't live out their dreams. And a lot of our community is not being reflected in the arts community. And I am very proud of the work that Denver has done. And I think SCFD has a lot to do with it. All these organizations have a lot to do with it. You mentioned Swallow Hill in District 7, which does our education for kids all the way through adults. And so I really appreciate you all elevating this and studying this in such a meaningful way. One of the things that I am concerned about personally, and I know Councilman Watson's probably concerned as well, because I know the Park Hill Music Festival is no longer happening. I lost the Underground Music Showcase. This was the last year that we will have that. And Youth on Record is a tier three, or maybe tier two. But I'm curious, how are we quantifying those performance-based groups so that we can make sure that we are elevating that as well? I think we've done a really good job in Denver with, you know, the bond initiative where we have physical art and we have the tier ones that everyone knows, but how are we elevating those tier and building capacity in those tier ones? And is there any part of your study that kind of talks about that?
Yeah, I don't know if it's something necessarily in our study, but I think you hit on a good point of sort of supporting those grassroots initiatives, those community-based initiatives. I think some of that goes to what we're seeing in trends of giving. A lot of those, you know, they don't have tons of capacity. They're not applying for or getting huge grants. I do think Denver Arts and Venues does an incredible job of supporting some of those grassroots community-based festivals and opportunities. For example, I know one of the recipients of Arts and Venues grants this year was the Kiss Fist Mural Festival. It was in the Rhino Art Park, and it was the first of its kind mural festival exclusively for deaf artists. Mm-hmm. So like that, and you know, it was run by an artist who herself, both of her parents are deaf and has just supported that community. And she's a muralist and saw that gap. And was able to get some funding from the city to support that. But I know there were other grants that she applied for that she couldn't get or was denied for and was just like a person on her own trying to figure that out. And that takes a lot of capacity building, professional development, to do that kind of work, working with the city to figure out, I'm sure, permitting for various things. So there's a lot that the city can do, both in terms of policy, permitting, professional development, as well as funding to help make sure those organizations can start and flourish and thrive. Really, those first few years are the hardest. You know, you have to be in existence for 5 years before you can even apply and be eligible for SCFD funding. So that's a really critical and difficult time for some of these, again, grassroots community-based initiatives. And then for some of the larger ones that have been around for a while, it becomes challenges, again, of sustainability, of cost of living, you know, the cost of every porta potty at a festival, you better believe, goes up every year. So keeping pace with that. And then again, thinking about you and I as cultural consumers, making sure we're showing up. Mm-hmm. We're showing up, we're buying our beer or our iced tea, we're buying t-shirts, we're tipping the band. again, that's on us to show up in that level of support.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think when I think about the Underground Music Showcase, there was an emphasis on accessibility.
Absolutely.
There was an emphasis on artists being paid a livable wage and the set hands. And so that all created a cost that was no longer sustainable. And so thinking about how we find those funding sources that you're talking about, whether it's SCFD or maybe we need to lean more on corporate sponsors. But the fear is always then they disagree with you and pull out, right? We've seen that happen.
It's very volatile.
And we cannot be coming and going at the whims of the political spectrum. All of a sudden, it's not cool to support communities of color, you know? And so I think that's where government really needs to step in and why I'm so proud of this work. So thank you so much for uplifting this and coming to our committee today. And there's nothing on consent. So with that, we'll be adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.